Time for our weekly check-in with State Representative Tacky Chan of the 2nd Norfolk District here in Quincy for another Tacky Talk. Hey, Tacky, nice to see you.
Good morning, Joe. Good to see you. It's Friday. It sounds like it's almost like a hostage video. Today is Friday, the 10th, is it, at this point?
Yes, that's right. I want you to show a newspaper with the date on it so we know.
Yeah, just checking my phone to make sure today's the 10th. So,
it is the 10th, yeah. How was your 4th of July?
I spent the weekend staining my fence, staining the back steps, vacuumed the floors, washed the floors, that kind of housekeeping stuff. And then, had a little mini barbecue, a small grill, just me and my mom. So, we did like a small home barbecue type situation and caught it good. And then listened to some of the musical performances on the television. During the remainder of the evening, and I think everybody else that's watching or listening to this knows about the illegal fireworks being set off all over the city, not just in Quincy. It's many communities are having the same issue.
Oh yeah, it's like up and down the Eastern Seaboard, really.
Yeah, no, it's in any place that can't have a celebration or people just taking matters into their own hands. I think we all understand it, but it's discourteous to the rest of us and a very legitimate danger depending on your geography. Setting it off in the middle of a dense urban city is troubling, but if you do it in a rural area or a forested area, you could potentially set off a fire if you're not cautious. So, either instance a fire in a city, urban area, or a fire in a forested area are bad regardless. Obviously it's hard to stop. You have to chase these people down. It's, noises everywhere. It's hard to find. I mean, again, and the cops are doing the best they can about it. And residents, I'm sure, reporting in what they hear. But it is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I think, didn't the Attorney General succeed in getting a New Hampshire company to stop soliciting in Massachusetts?
Yeah, they had a company, a state company, advertising heavily in Massachusetts to sell fireworks. And, there are some First Amendment rights regarding advertising, but I think this was the most prudent course for the business as opposed to avoiding having to fight for a lawsuit while they're making money on selling fireworks. And the message has already been sent out to do sell fireworks. And we do know in New Hampshire, it's legal to sell fireworks and you can bring them back over the border. And you have other means to try to get stuff out of state. You're better off, in my personal opinion, you're better off just complying with that and then just keep selling your goods as opposed to finding yourself in a protracted lawsuit costing you even more money. Because people already know. It isn't like a big secret way you go buy fireworks. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many being set off.
Exactly, yeah. I was down the Outer Cape over the holiday weekend. It's a problem down there, too. So it's not, not just in the urban areas. It's pretty much everywhere.
And because of social media and whatnot, people can figure out in the internet, people can figure out very quickly where to get them. So, if it's a legal product in other states, they can legally advertise all they want. And because of the nature of communication today, borders don't matter.
Right. What are you hearing, Tacky, now that we're in phase 3 of the reopening here in your district and across the state? How do you think it's going?
I think it's going fairly well. I think there's still an abundance of caution of both business owners and consumers, and especially business owners. I think hopefully are paying attention around the country and the world that people who are not doing cautious openings have found themselves in a close down again, if it's not just a party community, perhaps the whole state or the whole country, depending on the circumstances. And all of us would like to avoid having to close again. And it is imperative that everyone do their part to ensure that we don't close again. And the only way is to try to work with the store owners. Consumers also work with the store owners, please, not just for their safety and your safety, but also ensuring that they don't have to close the business because of your actions or not wearing a mask or being discourteous to other people in the store. Everyone is stressed out. And I do understand that. I think people do understand that. But we have to cooperate together, not just this government with the business, but the business of the consumers and vice versa, so people can keep people's jobs and keep business open the best we can. But some are a challenge. For example, if you're a small business, you know, as a restaurant, it's very difficult to do social distancing inside a small facility, which is going to be a big problem. Not everybody can have outdoor seating. The limitations on sidewalks and parking lots and the back of their facilities. And, you know, also the challenge of keeping count. I mean, the plaza will reopen and, you know, the village will keep track of people at every entry point of how many people come in and come out. And Whole Foods actually has people at the front door counting in and out. You go in and some people come out to maintain the limits, but that's one entry point. You know, if you've got multiple entry points, how do you coordinate between the different counters and different entry points what the total number is? So, I mean, it can be challenging. And, you know, as we've all been experienced on our shopping trips, getting groceries, that's what we've been doing for months.
Right.
You know, people are doing the best to be mindful. And, you know, I'll admit, I have to keep an eye for the one-way arrows in the floor, too, because I see it. You know, and I'm like already stepped into it and realized that I shouldn't have and have to turn around.
Yeah, it happens. Yep.
It happens. And I try, you know, I do try, but I do make mistakes and try to catch myself and, you know, follow the rules the stores put out.
Do you think this is going to be kind of a prolonged phase? It seems like there's no real rush to head into the fourth and final right now.
Well, the fourth and final phase is rather arduous because it's the whole vaccine/therapy
pyramid.
And coronavirus vaccines are extremely difficult to create. I know people hear reports out of London and the Oxford University, and you have Madaro, is it said that way, in Massachusetts, that seems to be
coming to something. I think, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have Beijing has actually put out a test run in their country. So, I mean, there's, you know, dozens of biotech companies on all parts of the globe working, some together and some apart, but definitely sharing data among themselves on their trials. But, I mean, we can get a therapy right away in terms of how to treat it, you know, particularly if you can treat it at home. That would go an extremely long way if you don't have a vaccine. And, you know, despite what people think, I mean, the general consensus that a vaccine that's been properly tested, properly knowledge doesn't have side effects, takes a long time. The idea that you're going to put a vaccine out there that has not been thoroughly tested, not knowing the true side effects, will cause more harm than good. And this only fuels more fear about vaccinations and fear on medication.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do understand there's an urgency, but if you want to put people's lives at risk or cause unnecessary fear, you start to rush this, it can lead to consequences that we never intended, and that consequence can result in greater harm.
Yeah, it seems like kind of, you know, just going by the guidelines that started out this whole thing, from, you know, facial covering and proper personal hygiene is going to be with us for the indefinite.
Well, I'm hoping personal hygiene stays with us forever.
Right.
I mean, that's the part that, you know, I said before that, and I've heard from other people that were just baffled by. I'm hoping personal hygiene becomes a permanent feature for all of us, which I find weird. But the mask wearing, you know, is science. It does help reduce the spread. And our demonstration in Massachusetts is by giving the virus less places to jump onto another human being, you know, means it dies off when the person with the virus, sadly, who are ill, mm-hmm. dies with. The lack of places for it to go contains it, it just kind of naturally goes away. And it's very simple, very, very simple process to do. I mean, this is the most least medically invasive way of trying to contain this, or more likely kill it off.
Right. Contact tracing, is that kind of subsiding now? Do you think it's kind of reached its peak?
No, I mean, contact tracing needs to continue, even if the counts are low, because the infection rate is so high. So some folks are probably sitting around thinking, oh, well, you have only, you know, less than 200 people infected in the last count. And, well, what's the big deal? It's a population of 6 million. That's a right. small number. It is the highly contagious situation and the asymptomatic issue, and not knowing the length of time it takes for the disease to carry into your body and mature into potentially a life-threatening situation, or does not create a life-threatening situation, and you yourself are going to have no symptoms and proceed to carry on to the next person. So, I mean, this is kind of the challenge associated. Hold on, let me just get off the ringer here. As the challenge associated with the disease is unlike any other. The fact that you don't have that symptoms to spread the disease. And there are new studies going on about the length of time that's in the air, how long, we've seen stories about the length of time on surfaces in a clinical sterile situation, which, obviously real life is not clinical and sterile. But I mean, there's so much we don't know. And as I said before, if you listen to my interviews back at the beginning of this pandemic in March and April, the information I have now is totally different than the information I had back then.
True.
About what we know about the disease and how it's transmitted and its lifespan. It is one of the most hardy coronaviruses I think anybody's ever seen. And I think that can't be understated. It is a virus that has retained its integrity for a long period of time outside the human body.
The situation in the nursing homes, assisted living facility, seems to have been improving recently. Is that because better protocols were in place, do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, the nursing homes are still in phase four. I'm hoping that it's a partial end of phase three on providing some services. Nursing homes and a lot of contractors and outside providers when we provide services to the people inside the nursing home. So, if they follow the protocols, maybe they get like a piece of the end of phase three, because I think the phases aren't going to be like one phase inside a phase. But in certain facilities, like, large indoor gatherings are in phase four, such as sporting events. Phase four, where you have contained the area with no outdoor air circulation, and it's basically passing. So although the Boston Celtics, the number of people that got infected, in contact with players who had the disease, even though they showed no symptoms and no severe illnesses. So, this is kind of the challenge. Assisted living facility has been issued guidelines to provide visitation components for certain conditions, some external services that provides to people that comes in. But again, they're under very stringent guidelines. Nursing homes continue to be only immediate staff necessary to operate the facility and, rigorous testing associated. But the 63% of all deaths in Massachusetts come out of nursing home, which is one of the major tragedies.
Yeah.
Well, particularly people who are trusted the care of others to that part of it.
Yeah. Is it true there's a move underfoot to exempt nursing homes from liability or some kind of criminal negligence on Beacon Hill?
I've not heard that. It may very be possible a conversation with various folks about that, because we've not even talked about liability issues with social coronavirus. I think you've seen Legal Seafoods, for example, bought pandemic insurance prior to the pandemic and is unable to collect. I think this is not health insurance. This is property insurance and liability insurance. And a lot of liability insurance does have so-called act of God provisions, which include things like pandemics. Certain types of act of God, because of the SARS situation. Bigger insurance companies work overseas. They've seen other epidemics in other geographies and started putting provisions into their policies that exempt them from having to pay out in certain circumstances. Obviously, none of us anticipated this. I think we've seen it just kind of like, oh, well, it makes sense. Boilerplate, not a big deal. It's not going to happen here. Of course, that happens.
Right.
There's a lot of industries that have exposed their workers to some danger. I mean, Amazon had incident warehouses, obviously supermarkets. I'm sure other businesses, not just the ones reported in news, have had incidences of people getting coronavirus.
Yeah, public transportation is another big one. So, yeah.
Well, MBTA, for example, has some liability protections under the law, but there have been over 40 MBTA employees impacted at minimum that I'm aware of.
Yep.
Getting COVID-19. So there is that question mark that's still lingering out there that none of us have an answer to just yet.
We talk a little bit, Tacky, about the police reform bill, the different versions between the House and Senate right now.
Yeah, the House has no version finalized yet. I continue to talk to my my colleague Carlos Gonzalez from Springfield, who's the head of the Black Latino Caucus, about what they're thinking. And the Asian Caucus is going to have yet another meeting to discuss what we're thinking. And they continue to have these days text messages, always text messaging between various folks, including the Speaker's office, about various thoughts on the matter. The Senate did put out a bill this week, as people see in the news, and it's after 11 o'clock, the Senate is attempting to debate this issue as we do in this video. And their version, I'm not very fond of, because it's what I refer to as the kitchen sink bill. They took every bill out there relating to any kind of criminal justice issue and just crammed it into a 76-page, lack of a better term, Frankenstein's monster. Hmm. With no real connection between one issue to another issue. And that's always very disturbing. Our approach, the House tends to try to do our best to make sure that the entire bill is pertinent to the question at hand. We have a question, we try to solve the question. Their bill is trying to solve dozens of questions simultaneously while venting. And the other problem with their bill is, in fact, a lot of the provisions in there has been vetted by other committees and sent to study orders, meaning the bill is not missing further, or they're retained by committees for further review. So the fact that the Senate has decided to manufacture a large bill that the joint committees have decided not to take action on is rather troubling, because their Senate leadership has decided that the committee, as a committee chairman, the committee chairman's opinions do not matter. We do all the research at the committee level. So, they're trying to push it out of Senate President's office in ways and means, ignores the committee work.
Yeah. Are the police unions, do you think, well represented? Or are they having input into this discussion?
No, they're not. Nobody had input into this. Oh. I can tell you, conversations with my other colleagues and friends about these issues clearly demonstrate there's no conversation, at least in the House. My good friend Carlos Gonzalez has taken the lead in conversing with police unions, conversing with spear officers, conversing with the sheriff's offices, and so forth and so forth, to try to figure out what's accepted and what's not, and also engage in candid conversations about what they see, that really needs to change, not just on police procedures, but also workplace environment and police departments, what they think a lack in training standards currently, the lack of uniformity, what they think is a lack of uniformity. As well as, relationship with the general public. So those conversations have been going on with Carlos, and he's the lead on that matter, of which I am, getting information from him. We have thankfully, only appointed a small number of folks to engage these conversations, as opposed to trying to talk to 50 of us, for example, and be involved in dissolve a bit of chaos, as opposed to pinpointing people to actually engage in conversation, talk, and then bring information back to us.
Yeah. I know one provision in the Senate bill is public schools would have the option to opt out of having a police officer on school ground. How do you feel about that?
Well, thankfully, the city does have some police presence that's necessary, but in Quincy, I think our schools are fairly safe. I do believe that if you're in a school system that's a bit more potential issues, that the citizen town should have their own right to determine the security levels, to mandate by state law to prevent school committees, mayors, police chiefs, and parents to advocate for the safety in their schools is very troubling. It should be left to the state to decide what is safe or not safe, given the fact that we do not have personal knowledge on the individual level to make those kind of decisions. I do believe, of course, that we should have more funding for services in schools. It's trying it done, period. It's very hard. Right. We still don't know what the budget deficit's going to look like.
That was my next question, actually. Yeah.
We don't know, because everyone needs more money. But we don't know what we're dealing with. Potentially between 15 and 20% tax revenue, a shortfall is a frightening proposition.
Yeah.
So, I have a hard time figuring out why the state senate thinks they know what's going on in every school district to make a blanket statement about how communities should try to keep their schools safe. I don't get it. It seems like a common sense issue to me.
Is the state prepared to help cities and towns fund the protocol for back to classes in the fall under the pandemic?
Well, this is the question again, right? The governor had announced $20 million to assist schools. Unfortunately, I think it's going to cost more than $200 million to the age of schools. Every school building is different. I think everyone listening knows that every school building is different no matter where you are in the Commonwealth. And that it's going to require much greater inclusion of funds. And, you know, social distancing is very difficult in some schools. The ventilation is different. How do you get kids in a, you know, orderly structure with social distancing involved? You know, school districts are very, very challenged right now trying to figure out how to juggle all these different aspects, you know, for the safety of the students, the teachers, and of course, parents as well. You know, COVID-19, kids get it. You know, thankfully, they have less severe systems in the majority of cases statistically, and they have a lower potential of that, thankfully. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It does happen. Yeah. You're saying statistically, it is a lower percentage. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Yeah. But also, they can give it to the parents. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, because we're not young anymore, the risk level goes up. But don't let the hair fool you too much. But the risk does go up. And, you know, if you live with your grandparents or you have people who are immunocompromised, or maybe your parents are immunocompromised, there's that additional danger. And I do understand we want to keep kids safe, but we also want to keep the parents safe and the whole family safe, too. Yep. So part of the social distance school is, yes, teachers, administrative staff at schools, the kids themselves, and the families of the children.
Yeah, a lot of folks are, you know, kind of torn between should they send their kids back to school or should they continue online learning. Some parents don't have a choice because they're not back to work yet and they don't have childcare available. So it's everything's kind of a question mark.
Yeah, and there's a psychological effect as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, between mass shootings around, unfortunately, when you're doing this with no editing, you end up making unusual noises. But you're right. I mean, you know, the social aspect cannot be undervalued regarding the ability for kids to socialize. It's an entire education component that is not a think and teach out of a book. On how to work and play with others at a young age has a lasting impact on all of us and how we socialize. You know, there's also the importance of learning together. Mm-hmm. The, you know, working together, learning together in the same place, and even playing together. I mean, school sports, even playground sports, forget just organized sports. The ability to play kids organize their own games is an important value of socialization. And the question is, what is going to be the mental impact on all people, not just us as adults, but also kids as a result of this changed work environment and the stresses associated with it, and also the importance of looking at, you know, how this is going to affect their education going forward in terms of the bigger picture of life. You know, you talked about school shootings before, I mean, school shootings have created a numbing effect, which I still find very troubling in America, that we're kind of numbed down to the fact that, you know, people have killed children in school systems. And we talk about the police safety issue, that every city council has to come up with their own safety protocols. But we, you know, the kids do, our kids becoming numb to this type of situation as adults have become, it seems to be numb as well. And I find that trouble.
Yeah. Any news yet, Tacky, on getting physically back into the state house?
Still no answer. Speaker's office has been updating us on Friday. Thankfully, there's been no COVID-19 cases in the state house. We had a small number of cases up here at the beginning of the pandemic situation, the first basically 5 weeks. The state house began to be heavily sanitized and limited people in. It was suspect that this fall we're going to have to do a massive reevaluation of office space and figure out if they can. Figure out, you know, how to safely move people around, and can we actually limit entry to the stairs of the outside public? You know, people have a right to visit us. They have a right to watch a session. People forget that you have a right to watch us in session.
Yeah.
So how do we manage that is very challenging. Because if you sit in the gallery, there is no social distancing. It is not designed for the situation. The gallery was built, you know, at the end of the 19th century. So this is, you know, the house site is not a young building. And the front of the building where the Senate is, you know, was built at the end of the American Revolution. So, I mean, this is a building designed for a different time.
Right.
It's more challenging than some modern buildings. I mean, we've been talking more about needing better technology. for staff, you know, and myself. We are using our own equipment, not cheap government equipment. This is a conversation we need to have because staff is not compensated. We're using personal resources. It's one thing to ask for spot work. It's something to ask for indefinite work on your personal devices, on your internet, on your cell phone, using their money to do work. I am, you know, going to have to bring this up more with the speakers, obviously, about this. And I know it costs money, but you know, there is a degree of fairness. If you're in the private sector, you know, especially, you know, there, it's acknowledgement that the business is responsible. And also security issues. If the business provides you electronic equipment, the business has security protocols associated with that. So if it's stolen or you don't return it, you know, they have protocols associated with those devices. So we're looking at stuff, you know, different software packages. And I'm not sure if we can actually spend any money to address this issue.
Right. Yeah, the need was also you know, laid bare in the public school system as well when they had to quickly switch to online. A lot of smaller communities didn't have those resources available.
And internet access, telemedicine, with school access, online learning, calls like we're doing now over Zoom and or Microsoft Teams or Google Conference or Cisco.
And others, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell they've been using a lot of softwares. You know, it's a strain on the telecom system. So if we don't have internet, like my colleagues at the edge of the Cape or my colleagues in Western Mass, it's getting harder to work. And you know, and if you can't afford good enough quality technology, telemedicine's harder because the cameras are not. So this is going to be an ongoing issue.
Yeah. We should remind folks the taxes are due July 15th, right? They were extended till July 15th, state and federal?
Yes, you know, the state and federal government have extended taxes July 15th. Again, I remind folks by moving our tax date to July 15th has resulted us to be short-term borrowing for the end of fiscal year on June 30th. Our fiscal year is already starting for the next cycle. So we've had to pass special laws for short-term borrowing using the July 15th tax returns to pay for the short-term borrowing the government opened for the time of the pandemic because we didn't get any tax money on April 15th to pay for things in the past 3 months to keep the government running. A lot of fees have been delayed to a future date. A lot of license fees have been delayed. So we are not getting that revenue also. Sales tax is a problem. Because the businesses have not been operating at normal capacity. And also that we're going to be doing some more delays on them filing their sales taxes. I think we're going to be doing a continuation of more of that down the road. I think that's something under consideration now. We're not receiving motor hell taxes. We're not receiving taxes from rental cars. Obviously, there's no meals tax going on.
Yeah. Lottery revenues are down, I'm sure. So yeah.
And groceries are exempted from sales tax. And they're going to be changing that. So, you know, the state is directly impacted by our ability to do business, which once again, back to the beginning conversation, please work with your businesses to make sure there's a safe environment so we don't have to close again.
Wait, did you say grocery sales tax might be changing?
No, we're not changing the grocery sales tax. No, we're not doing that. But I mean, people don't realize that they don't pay sales tax for the majority of the
groceries. Oh, right, yeah.
You know, certain loose items like candy is...
Yeah,
certain limited number of loose items are sales tax. Obviously, non-perishable goods are sales tax.
Yeah, cleaning supplies, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, but you're, you know, when you buy milk, it is not sales tax.
Right.
So as a result, I mean, people are purchasing lots of flour and yeast, but they're not subject to sales tax if it's a perishable, you know, consumable item.
Yep.
But we're obviously not changing that at all.
Okay.
But if you think that we're getting sales tax off of that, that's not true.
Right, okay.
Look at your receipt and figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. The census, Taxi, I'd like to end with the census if we could.
Yeah, we're doing better from last week. We're upticking like, you know, a point, a tenth of a point at a time. So my little note card here, nationally we're at 62%. In Massachusetts we're at 64% response. So thank you, we're still ahead of the national average. Quincy is behind the state average at 62.9%. We continue to run a bit over 1% point behind the state, which is seems to be consistent with what's going on. So many of us do have to do our part. Our neighbors around us continue to do quite well. Braintree is at 74.5%, Waymer's at 70.2%, Milton's at 78.6%, and Randolph is at 65.1%. Even though Randolph's the lowest of our surrounding communities, you know, we can definitely overtake Milton in my, I mean, Randolph in my mind if people continue to participate. The census tract is showing that the strong response rates out of a place like Squanum area, West Quincy, around the golf course, the county golf course down there, House Neck, Marymount has been having a strong response rate. My area in Wallston, where I live, in the beach, we know along the beach, have been good response rates as well. The weaker areas tend to be, again, you know, in the West Quincy, Brewers Corner area, the Quincy Center, parts of High Point, it looks like on the census block, is having a harder time on getting these numbers up. There's floating around the 50% zone, which brings down the whole average. People think how Boston's doing, they're about 52%. Boston's very much behind. So it's more imperative now that we continue to get our numbers up.
Sure.
If our numbers go up even more, it's actually going to change our legislative seats too, in terms of how our lines are drawn. And obviously our preference in Quincy is to not have people from outside of Quincy representing Quincy. We like to have to keep our Quincy legislators who are residents of the city representing the city. So I mean, that's more of a personal, political issue than a more practical big picture. But if you want to keep your Quincy legislators residents of your city, you need to make sure we get our census counts up.
Okay. 2020census.gov and through October 1st, I think now is the deadline.
Yep, they've extended the time period for that. And again, we're going to be doing some phone banking for people who have not responded yet. Again, we do not ask for financial information. We will not ask for personal identity issues in terms of accessing bank records or ask for credit cards or ask for gift cards or ask for anything out of you other than to fill out the forms. And if you need assistance to do that, they can try to get you a working website. The website has 14 language options. So you can do that. If you need a paper form, you know, arrangements can be made. There's ways to help you out. Or you can do a telephone. 2020census.gov has telephone numbers you can call also. A toll-free for you to do an appointment. So also remind folks, mail-in ballots are in the way.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, just today's the 10th. By the 15th, Secretary of State will be mailing out ballots. You can also call the city clerk's office. The forms are available. You must make an affirmative act to get a mail-in ballot. And on that form, you can check off which ballots you want. Once you check off that you want those ballot forms, the clerk has registered you as receiving those forms. And you shouldn't not go to the polls if you're getting a mail-in ballot, please.
No voting twice, exactly, yeah.
Do not try to vote twice. Do not try to confuse the clerks, please. If you're going to get a mail-in ballot, please stick to your mail-in ballot.
Right.
And if you get your mail-in ballot form, you can choose primary or the general or both.
Mm-hmm. And you can choose your party, obviously, too, right?
Absolutely. The party for the primary is on the box.
Yep.
So I've seen the form. It has all the written check boxes. And if you have a candidate here that's not one of the four parties listed, I think there's a space to write it what your party is. And you're going to vote for that.
Okay.
Outside the major parties. But, you know, again, I remind folks, you know, you should stick to your plan. If you're playing a mail-in ballot, please stay to vote by mail and do not show up at the polls to confuse all of us.
Yes. Yeah, it'll just make things longer on election night to tabulate the results. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it'll cause aggravation of people to polls because they have the books of who's got a ballot. They don't know who vote for the ballot. So you start creating those confusions. And if you still got questions, definitely call the city clerk's office.
Yep, absolutely.
City clerk's website has stuff up. Secretary of State's website up, and
yep.
You know, voting advocates are putting stuff on their websites. You know, we're getting our material up on our website as well on information on voting. It's really that kind of format. Quincy Sun has information this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, it is a first attempt at this. We're all learning as we go. I do expect people having problems learning how to do this for some reason, but I can see that. But, you know, please try to exercise your right to vote. And like I said, you know, be mindful and remember that when you ask for a mail-in ballot, please realize your mail-in ballot.
Very good. All right. Anything else that we should touch on today, Tacky?
Well, today's a tropical thunderstorm type thing rolling through, so I'm please be safe. I'm sure when you listen to this, things already gone by. But, I do wish people well. And, the August Film Festival will be virtual this year. They're working with QATV. I'll bring this up again down the road as we get closer. Yep. So as you guys work on virtual local entertainment, local news, and try to get local folks to get their video to you, and encourage people to watch QATV to stay in tune on stuff that isn't usually not listening to me, basically is what I'm saying. Or anyone, other local officials that we have, maybe good information for you. But also, reminding people what's going on in the community. And QATV provides that such a valuable service to show what else is going on in our city.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Although we're still closed to the public, our staff is in every single day and keeping programming up to date and relevant. So we're there for you for sure. So appreciate you mentioning that, Tacky. How do folks touch base with you?
Again, please do call the office at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Hit any of the staffers on the keypad, and we'll get back to you. Again, we're all prioritizing situations. Situation on the identity theft on the unemployment benefits have continued to be a major call in as we're trying to help people resolve that. And that's been a priority email. We've been trying to deal with as well. The numbers keep going up. As we saw, the fraud cases over $150 million stolen from taxes, unemployment benefit trust fund taxes, which only hurts the rest of us who need to get benefits and to qualify. Also just defrauding the government as well. That's been a real chore for us to try to get people help on that, and the investigation came on so fast. And again, the other issue coming up is the George Floyd situation. I continue to get a lot of phone calls and emails expressing people's much concerns about the issues of police reform. This is why the House is being very cautious, and women, we are listening and paying attention to people calling in and adding it to our thought processes and what's going on. So, we are getting uptick on all kinds of requests, but those are the two that are soon for that.
Sure. All right. Be well, stay safe, and we'll catch up next week.
We will be safe, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Tacky.